killing child at zoo. A string of days pass. During the nights, I've been sleeping in 20-minute intervals. I feel aimless. Things look cloudy. My homicidal compulsion, which surfaces, disappears, surfaces, leaves again, lies barely dormant during a quiet lunch at Alex Goes to Camp, where I have the lamb sausage salad with lobster and white beans sprayed with lime and foie gras vinegar. I'm wearing faded jeans, an Armani jacket, and a white $140 Comme des Garçons t-shirt. I make a phone call to check my messages. I return some videotapes. I stop at an automated teller. Last night, Jeanette asked me, "Patrick, why do you keep razor blades in your wallet?" The Patty Winters show this morning was about a boy who fell in love with a box of soap. Unable to maintain a credible public persona, I find myself roaming the zoo in Central Park restlessly. Drug dealers hang out along the perimeter by the gates, and the smell of horse shit from passing carriages drifts over them into the zoo. And the tips of skyscrapers, apartment buildings on Fifth Avenue, the Trump Plaza, the AT&T building, surround the park which surrounds the zoo and heightens its unnaturalness. A black custodian mopping the floor in the men's room asks me to flush the urinal after I use it. "Do it yourself, nigger," I tell him, and when he makes a move toward me, the flash of a knife blade causes him to back off. All the information booths seem closed. A blind man chews, feeds, on a pretzel. Two drunks, faggots, console each other on a bench. Nearby, a mother breastfeeds her baby, which awakens something awful in me. The zoo seems empty, devoid of life. The polar bears look stained and drugged. A crocodile floats morosely in an oily makeshift pond. The puffins stare sadly from their glass cage. Toucans have beaks as sharp as knives. The seals stupidly dive off rocks into swirling black water, barking mindlessly. The zookeepers feed them dead fish. A crowd gathers around the tank, mostly adults, a few accompanied by children. On the seal's tank, a plaque warns, "Coins can kill. If swallowed, coins can lodge in an animal's stomach and cause ulcers, infections, and death. Do not throw coins in the pool." So what do? Toss a handful of change into the tank when none of the zookeepers are watching. It's not the seals I hate. It's the audience's enjoyment of them that bothers me. The snowy owl has eyes that look just like mine, especially when it widens them. And while I stand there staring at it, lowering my sunglasses, something unspoken passes between me and the bird. There's this weird kind of tension, a bizarre pressure that fuels the following, which starts, happens, ends very quickly. In the darkness of the penguin habitat, edge of the ice pack is what the zoo pretentiously calls it. It's cool in sharp contrast to the humidity outside. The penguins in the tank glide lazily underwater past the glass walls where spectators crowd in to stare. The penguins on the rocks, not swimming, look dazed, stressed out, tired, and bored. They mostly yawn, sometimes stretching. Fake penguin noises, cassettes probably, play over a sound system, and someone has turned up the volume because it's so crowded in the room. The penguins are cute, I guess. I spot one that looks a lot like Craig McDermott. A child, barely 5, finishes eating a candy bar. His mother tells him to throw the wrapper away, then resumes talking to another woman who is with a child around the same age, the three of them staring into the dirty blueness of the penguin habitat. The first child moves toward the trash can, located in a dim corner in the back of the room that I am now crouching behind. He stands on tiptoes, carefully throwing the wrapper into the trash. I whisper something. The child spots me and just stands there, away from the crowd, slightly scared but also dumbly fascinated. I stare back. "Would you like a cookie?" I ask, reaching into my pocket. He nods his small head, up, then down, slowly. But before he can answer, my sudden lack of care crests in a massive wave of fury, and I pull the knife out of my pocket and I stab him, quickly, in the neck. Bewildered, he backs into the trash can, gurgling like an infant, unable to scream or cry out because of the blood that starts spurting out of the wound in his throat. Though I'd like to watch this child die, I push him down behind the garbage can, then casually mingle in with the rest of the crowd, and touch the shoulder of a pretty girl. And smiling, I point to a penguin preparing to make a dive. Behind me, if one were to look closely, one could see the child's feet kicking in back of the trash can. I keep an eye on the child's mother, who after a while notices her son's absence and starts scanning the crowd. I touch the girl's shoulder again, and she smiles at me and shrugs apologetically, but I can't figure out why. When the mother finally notices him, she doesn't scream because she can only see his feet and assumes that he's playfully hiding from her. At first, she seems relieved that she's spotted him, and moving toward the trash can, she coos, "Are you playing hide-and-seek, honey?" But from where I stand, behind the pretty girl, who I've already found out is foreign, a tourist, I can see the exact moment when the expression on the mother's face changes into fear, and slinging her purse over her shoulder, she pulls the trash can away, revealing a face completely covered in red blood, and the child's having trouble blinking its eyes because of this, grabbing at his throat, now kicking weakly. The mother makes a sound that I cannot describe, something high-pitched that turns into screaming. After she falls to the floor beside the body, a few people turning around, I find myself shouting out, my voice heavy with emotion, "I'm a doctor! Move back! I'm a doctor!" And I kneel beside the mother before an interested crowd gathers around us, and I pry her arms off the child, who is now on his back struggling vainly for breath, the blood coming evenly but in dying arcs out of his neck and onto his polo shirt, which is drenched with it. And I have a vague awareness during the minutes I hold the child's head reverently, careful not to bloody myself, that if someone makes a phone call or if a real doctor is at hand, there's a good chance the child can be saved. But this doesn't happen. Instead, I hold it mindlessly, while the mother, homely, Jewish-looking, overweight, pitifully trying to appear stylish in designer jeans and an unsightly leaf-patterned black wool sweater, shrieks, "Do something, do something, do something!" The two of us ignoring the chaos, the people who start screaming around us, concentrating only on the dying child. Though I am satisfied at first by my actions, I'm suddenly jolted with a mournful despair at how useless, how extraordinarily painless it is to take a child's life. This thing before me, small and twisted and bloody, has no real history, no worthwhile past. Nothing is really lost. It's so much worse and more pleasurable, taking the life of someone who has hit his or her prime, who has the beginnings of a full history, a spouse, a network of friends, a career, whose death will upset far more people whose capacity for grief is limitless than a child's would. Perhaps ruin many more lives than just the meaningless, puny death of this boy. I'm automatically seized with an almost overwhelming desire to knife the boy's mother, too, who is in hysterics, but all I can do is slap her face harshly and shout for her to calm down. For this, I'm given no disapproving looks. I'm dimly aware of light coming into the room, of a door being opened somewhere, of the presence of zoo officials, a security guard, someone, one of the tourists, taking flash pictures, the penguins freaking out in the tank behind us, slamming themselves against the glass in a panic. A cop pushes me away, even though I tell him I'm a physician. Someone drags the boy outside, lays him on the ground, and removes his shirt. The boy gasps, dies. The mother has to be restrained. I feel empty, hardly hear at all. But even the arrival of the police seems an insufficient reason to move, and I stand with the crowd outside the penguin habitat, with dozens of others, taking a long time to slowly blend in and then back away, until finally I'm walking down Fifth Avenue, surprised by how little blood has stained my jacket, and I stop in a bookstore and buy a book, and then at a Dove Bar stand on the corner of 56th Street, where I buy a Dove Bar, a coconut one, and I imagine a hole widening in the sun. And for some reason, this breaks the tension I started feeling when I first noticed the snowy owl's eyes. And then it recurred after the boy was dragged out of the penguin habitat, and I walked away, my hands soaked with blood, uncaught.